There's a new neighbor in town. The Lutheran Federal Credit Union is open and ready to serve members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Lutheran Federal Credit Union provides checking and savings accounts, home, car, and personal loans, on-demand mobile banking, 30,000 ATMs, and 5,000 in the co-op shared network. You'll find the modernized banking experience you need with excellent customer service and security you expect at LutheranFCU.org. LutheranFCU.org.
This isn't a situation where you have an episodic gaffe. This is daily and weekly where they are distancing themselves from statements he's making. There has to be a point at which you say, this is not somebody I can support for president of the United States. There has to come a point at which you say, enough.
I think he's the worst president maybe in the history of our country. I think he's been a disaster. He's been weak. He's been ineffective. You look at this so-called recovery, it's setting record lows. It's, I guess, not since 1949 has there been anything like it.
That's a little give and take. President Obama, yesterday in a press conference, wondering why Republican leaders, some of them, continue to support and yet try to distance themselves from the GOP candidate Donald Trump and Donald Trump's reaction to the president's statement. It's part of what we call the November elections this time around. There never has been and perhaps never will be another one like it. Every day, a new surprise. That's why we bring you a weekly update on the November elections. We're going to do the same for the remainder of this hour of Issues Etc. live this Wednesday, August the 3rd. For our update on the November elections, we call alongside our dynamic duo, beginning with Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me again.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome.
Thank you.
This is actually for both of you, but let's go first with Mark. I got some numbers here in terms of both polling and fundraising, comparing Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton with Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. So basically 2012 and 2016. First, in terms of the polling, post-convention, August 1st, 2012, Romney was in a virtual dead heat with an incumbent Barack Obama. Trump is currently trailing at this time behind Hillary Clinton at the same time, anywhere from 3 to double-digit numbers. That's the polling. Then in terms of the fundraising, if we look at Romney versus Obama in 2012, Romney in July of 2012, he raised $101 million as opposed to Obama's $75 million. And in 2016, Trump has just reported this morning $80 million in combined fundraising as opposed to Hillary Clinton's $90 million in combined fundraising. First of all, why the trailing in both these numbers, Mark?
Well, it's just simply that Donald Trump hasn't run any sort of conventional campaign, which is to say that he hasn't really run a campaign at all. And I think I've said this before, even on this program. I mean, one of the things from the very beginning that's made me, you know, extremely nervous about Donald Trump's chances is simply that. It's that on some level, there are basic mechanics, you know, that go into running a successful presidential campaign. Now, it doesn't have to, like, follow a certain blueprint. It doesn't have to be necessarily cater to the establishment or anything like that, but you do typically have to run ads. You do typically have to do some kind of messaging. You know, you have to have, you know, people on the ground in states that are working on, you know, get out the vote efforts, and that costs money. And the fact that Trump has totally neglected fundraising, and, you know, to the extent that he has raised funds, he hasn't really spent it on anything meaningful. Like, you know, Hillary's been bombarding swing states with ads, and Trump hasn't done, you know, absolutely any of that. And yet, all along, the only thing people are pointing to is that Trump's supposed success in the Republican primary for his, you know, his, whether or not he can win this. And the reality is you're talking about, you know, Trump captured a subset of voters of a subset of voters in the general election. And that is not a lot to hang your hat on in terms of, you know, looking towards Trump as a guy who can run a successful general election campaign.
Molly, how do you answer the why question?
Well, it's very similar to what Mark is saying. The beauty of the Donald Trump campaign is that he's exploding all sorts of ideas about what it means to be a politician and have a campaign. The downside is that there are, and that really is refreshing. You know, I think it's people forget that, but He doesn't talk the way a politician is supposed to talk. He doesn't play the games the politicians are supposed to be playing. And it's refreshing to see that, particularly in a Republican candidate. But you gave the comparison of 4 years ago, and I think it is worth noting that 4 years ago, Mitt Romney was fighting a very popular incumbent, one of the best politicians of the era. Donald Trump is trailing behind one of the worst politicians in American history. I mean, she's deeply unlikable, deeply flawed, is riddled with scandal, and is known for her bad decision-making. So there really is no excuse for trailing behind a candidate like that. Mitt Romney had many flaws as a candidate, but he was even at this point with Obama, again, a very popular president who was running as the incumbent. So this is, it's even worse, I think, than what the numbers suggest. And it doesn't take all that much money to be sort of competitive. It doesn't take all that much of a campaign strategy to be competitive. Right now, Hillary Clinton, who is a very robotic and disciplined campaigner, is putting out messages and then having her staff reinforce those messages. And then she has allies in the media that reinforce those messages. Earlier this week, the talking point was that Donald Trump is mentally unstable. And sure enough, ABC News reports this Clinton talking point. Republicans are always going to be at a disadvantage in that type of campaign, but Donald Trump isn't even trying to push out a message. So a campaign could just say, this week we're really going to focus on, you know, Hillary Clinton's lack of national security skill, or this week we're going to really focus on the bad numbers that came out recently about the gross domestic product, or this week we're going to focus on how the Obama administration doesn't deserve a third term because of all this scandal. And then you put out an ad, just one ad, it doesn't need to be expensive, that the media pick up on, and then they run with that talking point. Instead of doing that, you know, Donald Trump has been just running some sort of chaos operation so that we're not talking about Hillary Clinton's flaws. We're talking about Donald Trump's flaws.
Well, I also think this is key, what Molly's saying, because it completely undercuts a longtime Trump talking point among Trump and his supporters, which is that Trump is able to outsmart the media. You know, when Trump announced that he was running last summer, I mean, he was barely even registering in the polls, and he managed to get just an unholy amount of media coverage, and, you know, completely unjustifiable, you know, relative to his standing in the polls. And he sort of, you know, faked it until he made it, which is, you know, to say that he got so much media coverage, he eventually started rising in the polls. And so people thought that he was, you know, going to be able, the big talking point was that Trump was going to be able to do this throughout the election. He was going to, you know, somehow say outrageous things and trick the media into giving him all this free coverage that was going to benefit him. Well, where's the proof? I mean, we're months into the general election now, and he's trailing badly, and the media coverage for the last couple of weeks, you know, not helped by Trump himself and some of the ridiculous things he said, has just been absolutely brutal. I mean, you know, if Trump is supposed to be this master media manipulator, now is the time for him to be manipulating the media and helping him, because he's not running ads or doing the other conventional stuff, so he's going to need that media coverage, and he's just not getting it. He's not getting any results.
Molly, if you're a party loyalist, how do you find anything good in the fact that Trump is trailing Romney 4 years ago at this point in both polling and fundraising?
Well, I cannot say that I understand how the Republican Party has handled Donald Trump or continues to do so. Most recent reports have it that Reince Priebus, the chair of the Republican National Committee, as well as other highly placed Republican establishment officials who have endorsed Trump enthusiastically, are now saying that they're a little worried about how he's running his campaign. I think the time to have been worried has long since passed. There's nothing he's doing now that's tremendously different than what he was doing for the last several months. So I think you know, they have to understand that the Senate is in jeopardy, that the party is not unified. I mean, this week, Donald Trump thought instead of going after Hillary Clinton, it would be a good idea to go after Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. You know, that's an interesting strategy for a Republican presidential candidate to go with. So I have to imagine the Republican Party is waking up to the reality of what they chose to do. And, you know, it's worth remembering that 2 weeks ago there was a conservative uprising at the convention to just demand a little bit of transparency and a little bit of accountability, and also a little bit of a path to possibly picking a different candidate other than the one who's currently running against Republicans. The Republican Party establishment brutally shut that down. I mean, they steamrolled that, and they took part in a campaign of sort of mocking people who wanted to do that. So this is their guy, and I think they should stand behind their guy. They were willing to sacrifice party unity in favor of Trump. They were willing to sacrifice the sort of principled conservative contingent for Trump. If that's what they want to do, and that is what they wanted to do when they had a really good opportunity to not choose that, then I think they should stick with it and get truly behind Trump for the sake of their party interests.
Just to add a little context to what Molly's saying, it's not just that they're, you know, sort of panicking about what's going on. I mean, there are reports today that the top party brass are actively exploring ways to replace him at the top of the ticket and or, you know, worried that Trump's even going to drop out for some reason. So, I mean, this is, as far as they're concerned, all of a sudden this has become really serious. You know, Mike Pence publicly contradicted Trump on Paul Ryan today, called into Fox News, announced that he was, you know, proud to endorse him, where Trump has been threatening to start a super PAC to run against Paul Ryan. I mean, this is, you know, coming straight from the top down, but Molly's absolutely right. I mean, the convention was what, just over, you know, was 2 weeks ago, and, you know, they had an opportunity to deal with this problem there, and somehow now we're just seeing the warning signs. I mean, these people just, I mean, they deserve a lot of criticism for, you know, suddenly adopting this posture that Trump is some sort of, you know, uncontainable and problematic candidate, because the signs were there all along.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, along with Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections when we come back. President Obama is wondering aloud why Republican leaders continue to support Trump when they have to distance themselves from him on a daily basis, even called Trump unqualified. We'll talk about that after this.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
This is Pastor Philip Hauser with Lamb of God Lutheran Church in Papillion, Nebraska. We're faithful to the Lutheran confessions as recorded in the Book of Concord, and our services are traditional Eucharistic liturgies in accordance with the ancient texts Saturday evening and Sunday morning. If you're ever in Omaha, come visit us. We're on Lincoln Street between 84th and 96th in Papillion. Our website is lambofgodlcms.org.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries, right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of the Federalist. Before the break, Molly, Mark was talking about the criticism that the Republican leaders deserve for kind of coming late to the party of figuring out that Donald Trump is a bit of a loose cannon. President Obama made some observations yesterday morning in a press conference, first calling Donald Trump unqualified to hold his office, and then also wondering aloud how Republican leaders could continue to support him when they have to distance themselves from him almost on a daily basis. What's going on here, Molly?
President Obama is doing that because he understands that the entire chaos of the country, the division and the, just going so far as to pick someone like Donald Trump is a direct result of the kind of presidency that he ran. He is the one who ran as a demagogue and governed as a demagogue. And Republicans and their voters tried very hard to respond in constitutional means. They were mocked for this by the media. They didn't get enough support from Republican officials. And so voters have had enough. They understand that Barack Obama is the guy who engaged in all sorts of executive overreach, who has been just one scandal after another, one bad decision after another, and the response from the media is to praise him all the more. When you have that kind of disconnect between reality, the reality that the Obama administration punished political opponents using the IRS, engaged in horrible mismanagement of the Veterans Administration in a way that would have destroyed the Bush presidency, has engaged in far more war fighting and invasion than the predecessor who we were supposed to believe was this horrible warmonger. And you see this disconnect between what is actually happening in governance and the way the media portray it and the results that you would hope to see in our country. And I think people responded by reacting and picking Donald Trump. Barack Obama is smart enough to understand that's what's going on. He understands that his true legacy is Donald Trump. And he knows that if Donald Trump is elected, there will be no way to avoid that he is the direct cause of that election. And he wants to avoid that at all costs. That's why he's speaking out. I mean, this is a guy who supported a woman under FBI investigation, endorsed her while she was under FBI investigation. He's not really the right person to talk about who's fit for office and who's appropriate. That's what's going on.
And I just want to add that this is, I think on one level, actually, this is like smart political strategy because, I mean, I think a lot of moderates and independents and women in particular are very concerned about Donald Trump's, supposed temperament, and they're very sort of put off by that. And so the president of the United States being a big authority figure coming out and, echoing those concerns, is validating to some people who maybe don't pay as close attention or don't have as many, formed thoughts about, Obama's divisive presidency. But I do want to say, though, just the sheer hypocrisy coming from Obama about, the danger that is Donald Trump. I mean, I agree that certainly the concerns are there this time around. But if you look at what Obama and the Democratic establishment did to, say, Mitt Romney, who was an exceptionally qualified man of, excellent character and temperament, they made him sound like a cross between Montgomery Burns and John Wayne Gacy. And now to come out and say, oh, well, but Trump's the real threat. I mean, as Molly said, a lot of the reason why we have Trump is because people are reacting to that climate. It's like, they said we were crazy when we tried to propose all these moderate responses. Well, guess what? Here's crazy. We want change and we want it now, and we're going to do whatever the most radical, insane thing we can think of to do to shake things up. And that's how we end up with Trump. Now, I don't know if I necessarily endorse that solution. I think it's the best way, but Barack Obama is definitely responsible for that mess.
Can you explain from the Trump side why he chose to take on the parents of a fallen soldier, the Khans? Molly.
I think the real thing is that Donald Trump can't stand to be criticized, and that was easily the most effective criticism at the Democratic convention. The Khans spoke about what it was like to lose a son in combat, to have a son lay down his life for the country, their son being a practicing Muslim, and it made everything that Trump says about, war and immigration and whatnot, it was an effective critique. And so he understood that it was an effective critique and thought that fighting back would be good. There are ways to do that. I mean, you saw during the Republican convention when Trump had all these parents of children who had died due to Obama policies, the media reacted very negatively to that. They said that this was emotional manipulation, that this was unfair, that these people should never have been paraded on stage. They weren't to be trusted because they were in such an emotional state. There's a high level of hypocrisy in how the media handled different grieving parents' stories. And I think that it would have been very effective for Donald Trump to point that out, or maybe even to highlight or separate this family from the larger and very obvious problem of Islamist terrorism. It could have been a winning issue for him to take them on in a certain way. I don't think he did a very good job, as evidenced by the fact that I don't think even, you know, handlers like Newt Gingrich have been able to frame what he did in a way that doesn't look awful.
Mark, is this essentially the problem? You talked about Trump touting himself as the ability to manipulate the media, but it appears as though it's not very difficult to manipulate Donald Trump into, or to, at the very least, to distract him.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. I mean, he's so attuned to attacks on his personal image. He's so thin-skinned. You know, there are all kinds of, you know, anecdotes about this. You know, the stuff about, you know, Trump responding very poorly and, you know, to comments about the size of his hands and just all kinds of petty things that normal people would be above. And Donald Trump seems to be completely, you know, triggered by these things. And, you know, Democrats, well, I mean, I think actually candidates in the Republican primary figured that out. I mean, certainly Marco Rubio went a little overboard in the end, but he did have some success going after Trump, like on that level, in terms of like getting down in the gutter with him. Democrats just had to like watch what happened, and they had to figure out a way to go after Trump personally, but somehow remain above the fray. And getting the cons up there on stage of the Democratic convention to talk about their reverence for the Constitution and the fact that they were Muslim and the fact that their son had sacrificed, and you know how all of these things stood counter to what Donald Trump has been saying about immigration, really just hit Trump right where it hurt. And, you know, again and again, we've seen in this election, Donald Trump just can't stand personal criticism. And he, you know, takes it very poorly. And he says, you know, ridiculous things, you know, in response to like people that should be, you know, he should be above criticizing, like, you know, Megyn Kelly or journalists and things like that. You know, it's just not the place for a Republican presidential candidate to be punching down like that. But, you know, Trump does it all the time.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections. When we come back, we'll turn to Secretary Clinton and why the Washington Post gave her 4 Pinocchios for a statement she made on Fox News Sunday.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How has pop American Christianity replaced the Holy Trinity with the unholy trinity of me, myself, and I? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Has American Christianity Failed? It's written by regular guest Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Has American Christianity Failed? Is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or find out more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Has American Christianity Failed? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's our weekly update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist. Molly, let's turn to Secretary Clinton. Why did the Washington Post give Mrs. Clinton 4 Pinocchios for a statement that she made about FBI Director Comey and her quote-unquote truthful statements on Fox News Sunday in an interchange with host Chris Wallace?
Did you know that you have really messed up when you're a Democrat and the fact-checkers admit that you were lying through your teeth, because the fact-checking enterprise is so shady and so biased that it's rare to see that type of criticism of a Democratic candidate. But Hillary Clinton, it was interesting that she went on Fox News because she had sort of boycotted them for a long time. And she did sit down for an interview with Chris Wallace, who is a very good interviewer. And he wanted to talk about her lies with regard to the email scandal. He brought up that FBI Director James Comey had said that every single thing she had said about her private email server was a lie, was not true. And she responds that that's not what she heard, which is undoubtedly true because the Clintonian capacity to redefine reality in such a way as to make obviously illegal or unethical behavior suddenly greased into an acceptable posture is a trademark of Clintonianism, and that's just exactly what they do. And so she tried to do that. Chris Wallace was prepared, having known how the Clintons operate for decades, and went straight to video showing FBI Director James Comey testifying before Congress that she had lied about all these different things, or she had made these false statements or untrue statements with regard to her server, the classified nature of the information, whether it was able to be accessed by foreign governments and whatnot. This was a devastating interview, so devastating that even the New York Times public editor, who's sort of their ombudsman, criticized the paper ruthlessly for covering up that this interview happened and what was said in the interview. She wrote a piece today about what you won't read in the New York Times, and she thought it was just absolutely scandalous that an interview with this much news was not something that was shared with New York Times readers. I would also just point out that in a traditional campaign, the kind that Donald Trump mocks, this would have been ammo for several days of reinforcing the message that Hillary Clinton can't be trusted, that she lies, that she evades responsibility for her actions, and that she still can't ever admit to doing things wrong, no matter how bad they are.
What's your take, Mark?
I would just add that I don't think it'd be fodder for days. I think it'd be fodder through the end of the election. I mean, they'd be, you know, carpet bombing Hillary Clinton on this. Because, again, it is not just that Hillary Clinton told a self-serving lie to Chris Wallace. It is a pattern of repeated self-serving lies all the way down for months now. I mean, her email explanations have just been absolutely incredible at every turn. First it was, well, there was no classified information in the emails. Well, turns out there were hundreds and hundreds of emails with classified information in them. Well, you know, she didn't send any emails that were marked top secret at the highest level of classification. Well, it turns out she had top secret emails. Well, she didn't knowingly send any emails that were marked as classified at the time she sent them. Well, actually, it turns out that she did. You know, it turns out that her aides, you know, apparently must have stripped away classified markings from certain emails. I mean, just at every opportunity, she lied and she lied and she lied. And it is just absolutely appalling on every level. And yet, here we are. She's running against a guy who's not running a conventional campaign, that doesn't know a gift when he sees it, and is unable to, you know, make any sort of, you know, inroads with the voters over such, you know, such a gift from the electoral gods, because he's focused on whatever petty thing that, you know, is irritating him personally at the time. It just, if any other Republican candidate were running this race right now, it's very hard for me to conceive that they wouldn't be leading significantly in the polls right now.
If I were Donald Trump's campaign manager, which is a nightmare scenario for me personally, but if I were, that's the ad. I just run it in high rotation, whatever it costs. I just run that from now until November, juxtaposing the two statements of the FBI director and of the Democratic candidate. Molly, why not?
Well, it's particularly important given the media environment that you do put an ad like that out to push into the narratives that you're going to get from a media they've always been biased, but Donald Trump has sort of given them the excuse to just openly flout their bias. Flaunt their bias. And he's, you know, it's hard to say why he's not doing it, but it is interesting to note that in recent days, word has come out that Donald Trump's campaign is in despair over their inability to help him work on messaging or keep him restrained. Paul Manafort, who is this very effective political strategist, he's worked with, allies of Vladimir Putin, you know, in the past, he's very globally competent in how to run tough campaigns. He apparently is fed up and unable to control the Donald Trump. And so it's hard to say why. I mean, it's to the point this year has been so crazy that you have people openly talking about conspiracy theories, like maybe his goal was to get Hillary Clinton elected all along, or he never thought it would go this far. And that's why he's making such odd electoral decisions. I do want to make one quick point, though, which is immediately after the Republican convention, Donald Trump got a very small bounce, but a little bit of a bounce in the polls. After the Democratic convention, Hillary Clinton got a large bounce, but a more traditional bounce. It's really better to wait even just another week or two to see where things are going to even out. You get a lot of media attention when you have a convention, and it affects the way people think they're going to vote. And the electorate has shown that it has a very short-term memory and that it can be swayed by mistakes one candidate or another makes, but then they kind of forget them after a couple weeks. So I think that people should possibly calm down, see how things shake out, and see if maybe Donald Trump does decide in a few weeks that he wants to actually run a campaign against Hillary Clinton. Might be too late, might not, but I think people can get whipped up a little bit right in the post-convention haze.
Did the Clinton campaign jump the gun in a very significant way during the Democratic National Convention when it comes to Tim Kaine, claiming that Tim Kaine now supported overturning the Hyde Amendment that deals with abortion? Kaine has subsequently come out and said, oh, no, I don't. Mark?
You know, that's... I don't know exactly what happened there. It is sort of fascinating that, you know, when Kaine was introduced as the nominee for vice president, there was all this talk about how that was going to play, because in recent years the Democratic Party has gone like all in on pro-choice rhetoric to the point that, you know, it would in fact be alienating to, I think, a lot of moderate voters. And Kaine seemed like a good pick because he actually, you know, relative to other Democrats, he may be functionally pro-choice, but he's at least religious and he at least spouts, you know, concern about, you know, abortion in a more traditional Democratic sense. He's more of the safe, legal, and rare variety than, you know, abortion on demand and without apology. So I don't know what was happening there, because, and it hasn't really been explained, and there hasn't been a lot of good reporting on it. But, yeah, they claim that Kaine flip-flopped, and then Kaine came out and clarified that, no, he hadn't at all.
I think that's wrong. Kaine's message makes no sense at all. What he says is, in the confines of his mind and nowhere else, he supports the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits taxpayers from having to pay for abortions in certain cases. But he would never act on that in a policy sense. He agreed with Hillary Clinton that policy-wise, he will support a repeal of the Hyde Amendment, which, by the way, is one of the most popular pieces of legislation in this country. Whether people are pro-life or pro-abortion, they largely agree that people shouldn't be forced to pay for abortions with their taxpayer funds. I'm certainly interested that within the confines of his mind, but nowhere else, Tim Kaine supports this amendment. But unless he were to exit his mind and actually engage in policy that supported the amendment, it is meaningless to say that within his mind. It's as meaningless as the typical Catholic pro-choice politician who says that he's personally opposed to abortion, but if he were to ever get pregnant, he wouldn't have one. Well, he's never going to get pregnant anyway, so it's of no interest to anyone what he would do if he had a uterus. And, you know, I mean, it's a meaningless statement that the media lap up, but actually has no bearing on policy that might interest pro-lifers or those who support abortion.
Molly, before we let you go, you wrote a lengthy column today about the Netflix show BoJack Horseman and abortion. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so BoJack Horseman is a Netflix original series. It's animated. It features a humanoid horse who was a sitcom star in the 80s and made a lot of money, but has a very meaningless and unfulfilling life. It's not safe for kids. It's very adult themed, but it's a very well done show that explores themes of depression and addiction and inability to form intimate relationships and whatnot. In season 3, which just came out in late July, they have an episode dealing with one of the characters having an abortion. And it had such promise given what the writers of the BoJack Horseman show typically do, which is show issues in all their complexity and how people make really bad decisions out of fear and whatnot. And my piece looks at how they weren't able to do that with this show. And I argue it's because, in general, people making abortion-themed art tend to be very political, almost like what you would see from, you know, evangelical-themed movies that get very preachy instead of persuasive about faith in God or whatnot. That same problem afflicts abortion-themed media. They're very one-sided. They're not able to show the nuance or provide any depth because doing so would admit too much and make the decision to have an abortion look too bad for the character involved. But I go into it at much greater length. But it's still a good show, but that was a very, very poorly done episode that sheds light on why abortion-themed art in general doesn't do very well.
Folks, you can read Molly and Mark Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And Mark Hemingway is senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thanks.
Thanks again.
If you appreciate the expert guests and expansive topics that you hear on a daily basis here on Issues Etc., be sure to order an audio DVD of the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a recommended contribution of $300. Speakers on the audio DVD include Adrian Dorheinz, Will Whedon, Brian Wolfmiller, Larry Rast, Jonathan Fisk, Chris Roseborough, and Carl Fikencher. You can order this audio DVD online at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. More than 8 hours of teaching, preaching, and singing on an audio DVD from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions, talking with Pastor Paul McCain about the Lord's Prayer, the petition, "Give us this day our daily bread," one that Luther says begins in the humble bread basket, but is so broad as to include almost everything. Well, in fact, everything that God uses to provide for the support of this body and life. We'll also discuss an essay by the New York Times public editor titled "Why Readers See the Times as Liberal" with Terry Mattingly. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. I'll talk with you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Grace Lutheran, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Heritage Lutheran, Valparaiso, Indiana. Mount Olive Lutheran, Duluth, Minnesota. Our Savior's Lutheran, Windham, Minnesota. St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa. St. John Lutheran, Yuma, Colorado. Christ Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.